Gospel music is the big missing link in most discussions of American post-war popular music. It's the least reissued, least listened to late 20th century form these days. And our rock critic Ed Ward says that's a shame. Despite its influence on soul music and today's R&B, not to mention its inherent drama and power, and its message of hope to oppressed people, relatively little has been written about it. Ed read a new history of gospel called People Get Ready by Robert Darden, and he has this review.
I'm too close to my journey's end. I'm too close to turn back into a world of sin. And I wouldn't take nothing for my journey right now. Lord, you know I'm just gonna make it to heaven somehow. I'm too close.
I know rock fans give lip service to gospel music, but I don't know many who've actually heard much of it. Since it's hard to figure out where to start with gospel music, I was quite happy to see an ad for a book called People Get Ready, A New History of Black Gospel Music, written by Robert Darden and published by Continuum. It looks scholarly, and Darden was identified as a professor at Baylor University and gospel editor of Billboard, so I got a copy. It's a remarkable book, all right. Darden's really done his homework, and of the book's 425 pages, the last 100 are taken up by 78 pages of footnoted references in the index. He's made some significant discoveries and made some really brilliant connections. But the question remains, is this a place to start learning about gospel? Professor Darden's at his best in the book's first half, where he charts the growth of African-American Christian sacred music from its very beginnings. Do we really need to know about African liturgical dance in order to understand the sensational nightingales? Well, yes, in a way we do. These dances evolved into what were called ring shouts, which were practiced during and after slavery, and were condemned by church leaders in the 1920s and 30s as being backwards and unseemly. Yet the physical reactions in the congregations that the newer music these preachers preferred were, arguably, the same thing, expressed differently. Darden obsesses about the nature of African music, the African tribes who were enslaved, and their practices, because he wants to establish that there were survivals even after the generations who remembered Africa firsthand had died off. And he does, as far as I'm concerned. He then investigates the spiritual, just what it was and what it sounded like, although he concedes there's no exact way to tell. He brilliantly establishes connections between spirituals and the slave underground, particularly the Underground Railroad and Harriet Tubman, who is known to many as Moses. And from there, he considers the relationship between the minstrel show and the groups of Jubilee singers who emerged after the Civil War, giving Americans and Europeans their first hearing of authentic, or semi-authentic anyway, African-American music. All of this takes us up to the start of the 20th century, and so far, so good. When the commercial gospel scene appears, the industry of selling hymn books and writing music, especially for the African-American churches, Darden charts it well, and his synopsis of the emergence of the first really important gospel figure, Thomas A. Dorsey, is excellent. Dorsey's important because he basically invented gospel music as we know it today, aggressively promoting his compositions and creating a body of work that includes songs many people think are folk songs they're so familiar.
I'm tired and weary, but I'm a the Lord comes to call me away. Oh Lord, where the morning is bright and the lamb
By providing a repertoire on which the next generation of gospel performers could build, Dorsey opened the gates to a flood of groups and soloists who added a showbiz element to the church's music. One of his early protégés was Mahalia Jackson, who influenced James Cleveland, who played piano for the Caravans, most of whom became successful solo performers, and was friends with Reverend C.L. Franklin, whose daughter Aretha, well, you know about her. But it's just at this period, when names people today would recognize start to appear, that Darden falters. As soon as the 1950s begin, the narrative begins to lose focus. At this point, I began to hanker for another book. The Gospel Sound by Anthony Heilbutt seems to raise Professor Darden's hackles, although he quotes numerous interviews Heilbutt has done. But Heilbutt is still in print, as far as I know, and it could be that his take on gospel is a more lively one for people coming to the music from rock and roll. Heilbutt goes into the personalities and some of the sociology of gospel, noting, for instance, that the black church is a refuge for nonconformists, including sexual ones. I found it very odd that Darden discussed two major post-war gospel figures, both gay, one flamboyantly so, without mentioning this aspect. Weirdly, he also barely mentions the great hit song by the Impressions, After Which People Get Ready, is named. Sometime during what he calls the golden age of gospel, Darden runs out of steam and the book turns into a dull recitation of names. Fortunately, as I said, Heilbutt's still in print, so if you're interested in post-war gospel, I'd start there and then pick up Darden for the background. Of course, there's still one problem. The vast majority of the music of gospel's golden age remains out of print. How about some smart record company doing for gospel what Rhino did for doo-wop 12 years ago with its magnificent doo-wop box? I think they'd be surprised at the reaction.
Ed Ward reviewed People Get Ready by Robert Darden.